Hello, Gallatin Valley and online listeners. You are listening to KGVM, Bozeman Community Radio, broadcasting at 95.9 FM and streaming at kgvm.org. I'm Roxana, and this is Desert Oracle Radio Replay. Whew, it is warm out here. The chipping sparrow's singing in the background. I don't know if you can hear it. We had a couple mountain lions kind of roll through the area calling to each other the other night. That was really cool. Well, I had a health thing pop up this week, so we're going to have one more July double feature. Our first episode was the most recent release by Ken Lane on July 12th, 2024. The title is Dialogue of the Dogs, and it's perfect for Bozeman, if you ask me. Find a place to cool off with your favorite four-footed friend and enjoy.
Desert Oracle Radio, the voice of the desert.
Night has fallen on the desert, thank the gods. Always an interesting time of year here in the Mojave, if by interesting you mean haven't left the house during daylight hours in 2 weeks. But am quietly studying the lines of revolutionaries surviving in the jungles during times of great oppression. Too hot to sleep, and time is running away. Cervantes, imprisoned and enslaved, composed parts of Don Quixote during his ordeals. No air conditioning, no swamp coolers, no cold beer. And no internet to occupy his mind, to dull his senses. Plus, his left arm was all screwed up from a war he was in one time. He was a galley slave on a Barbary pirate ship, too. And one of the weirdest chapters in the history of books is this Dialogue of the Dogs from another of his novels. Which one? I can't think in this heat. I try and it just makes my head hurt. But the dogs are relaxing on these straw mats along a quiet street at night by the hospital, and the one dog is mostly telling of his various adventures to the other dog, who brings out interesting details with his replies. And they speak beautifully. Although this is the first time they've been graced with the ability of speech. Scipio says to Berganza, "My friend, let us leave our watch over the hospital tonight and retire to this lonely place and these mats, where, without being noticed, we may enjoy the unexampled favor which heaven has bestowed on us both at the same moment." Replies Berganza, "Brother Scipio, I hear you speak and know that I am speaking to you. Yet I can't believe it. So much does it seem to me to pass the bounds of nature." "That's true," says Scipio. "And what makes the miracle greater is that we not only speak, but hold intelligent discourse, as though we had souls capable of reason. Whereas us, we are so far from having it that the difference between brutes and man consists in this, that man is a rational animal and the brute is irrational? Berganza answers, I hear all you say, Scipio, and that you say it and that I hear it causes me fresh admiration and wonder. But it is very true that in the course of my life, I have many a time heard tell of our great endowments, and so much that some, it appears, have been disposed to think that we possess a natural instinct. So vivid and acute in many things that it gives signs and tokens, little short of demonstrating that we have a certain sort of understanding capable of reason. Says Scipio, what I have heard highly extolled is our strong memory, our gratitude, and great fidelity. So that it is usual to depict us as symbols of friendship. Thus you will have seen, if it has ever come under your notice, that on the alabaster tombs, on which are represented the figures of those interred in them, when they are husband and wife, a figure of a dog is placed between the pair at their feet, in token that in life their affection and fidelity to each other was inviolable. Answered Berganza, I know that there have been grateful dogs who have cast themselves into the same grave with the bodies of their deceased masters. Others have stood over the graves in which their lords were buried without leaving them or taking food till they too died. I know likewise that next to the elephant, the dog holds the first place in the way of appearing to possess understanding, then the horse, and last the ape. Answers Scipio, true, but you will surely confess that you never saw or heard tell of any elephant, dog, horse, or monkey having talked. Hence, I infer that this fact of our coming by the gift of speech so unexpectedly falls within the list of those things which are called portents, the appearance of which indicates, as experience testifies, that some great calamity threatens the nations. From the Dialogue of the Dogs by Cervantes, and when it gets this hot, sometimes you hear all the dogs speaking to you. Saying soundscapes on this program are by Red, Blue, Black, Silver.
Desert Oracle Radio.
It's so infernally hot that I've started unfollowing the weather update accounts. No thank you. I am well aware of the situation, and I am in the bunker. And what does one do in these bunker days of summer? I tried to work. I tried to read. I tried and failed to think. It takes 2 hours to cool down after the evening walk, which has been abbreviated these past many nights. As the dog is old and so am I, and we have to follow the protocol of desert summertime. The dog is older than me in dog years. The dog is in dog years. I'm in human years. The dog is basically Joe Biden. But I'm Kamala Harris. Age-wise, I mean. The dog's still in pretty good shape, though. Still runs when it's not an oven outside. Now and then you run into somebody, even though you try to avoid them. And finally, they need to speak. And there's a certain miserable kind of person who thinks that referring to your blessed companion as a senior dog is cute. Do not speak to me in dog shelter volunteer jargon, you idiot. Do not speak to me at all. Do not gaze upon my dog. Do not block my path. We are not on neutral ground, and we are not friends. As I like to remind myself, as suicide summertime settles in again, for 7 or 8 months of the year, it's glorious to live in the desert. A generalization, of course, you must always adjust for altitude and latitude and attitude, but October is in sight. Once again, it will flash by and the haunting thought returns. How many Octobers remain? How scant are these sweetest times of year? What should you do in the triple digit time? As little as possible. So I was under the swamp cooler with an iced tea and the BBC, and the headline says, "Ice cream van swept out to sea in rising tide." What a ominous headline, especially with the picture. There's a rocky beach, choppy water, and there's an English ice cream van half submerged in the surf with a blurry guy headed towards it, I think. He's shirtless, and there's a woman on the beach in a long black coat. Like a paperback cover of the novel Rebecca. Maybe the guy is going to get an ice cream to be chivalrous, or maybe that's his ice cream van and he's bringing the ice cream to the customers waiting on the beach in their long black coats in July. It's hard to tell. So I kept looking at the picture and finding really nothing else of note other than the rocky cliffs going into the sea that reminded me of sunset cliffs at the end of Ocean Beach and the tide pools there, where it's foggy and misty and you can just imagine being in the ice cream truck in the cool, cool sea. Seagulls calling, waves gently crashing, the ice cream slowly melting. And then I went outside to get the junk mail and burned my hand on the mailbox. Again. I need to hang an oven mitt by the front door. But that feels like surrender. The grocery stores aren't open late anymore, and I realized I missed out on a chance to get some food, which just seemed like a disgusting idea during the heat of the day. But deep in the night, it cooled down a little bit. The pressure comes off. If you stay up late enough, it might get down to 80 or so outside. And then you remember you brought home an extra burrito from the Del Taco yesterday. And there's half an avocado and a Ziploc next to it. And you've got a couple of leftover salsa tubs from the other taco shop. Just up the road from the three bad Mexican restaurants, all within sight of the others. We make do in such places. I think they're called food deserts. Heard that on NPR one time. An ice cold beer and a pint glass frosting in the freezer for an hour. And then in the dim patio light out back, long after midnight, I see a beautiful bobcat stroll by. Then it makes a second pass because the kangaroo mice have been hopping around out there. And now it is moving very slowly, fading into the darkness, but the light catches its bobtail as it bounces. Later, it sits on the edge of the patio, like the most dignified and regal house cat, like an Egyptian goddess, gazing towards the shadowy Joshua trees. And then it's daytime again, 114, and I can't seem to drum up the energy for much more than remotely monitoring the situation, because it's one of those rare times. Yes, generally it's fine and good to ignore the news, which is a product that must be distributed every single day, every hour, regardless of whether anything's happening. Most of it's background noise. A way to keep the systems operational, the direct deposit paychecks every 2 weeks, etc. But when you're keeping tabs on the historic political craziness around the world and in your particular country, the accelerating breakdown, you're going to be checking on the situation more often than is generally advised. And it only happens live on the internet, unless you're in the room with the members of Congress or whatever, George Clooney. It's only live on the internet, on the various systems we use to keep up with the news. Whatever's on the TV news is old by the time they get around to the nightly talk shows or the hourly headlines. Radio news is even more useless now, rarely live unless it's sports. So we try to follow what's going on. Who is telling the biggest and most obvious lies at a given moment? And also existential questions like, is there anybody actually running anything? Anyone we know? Anyone we'd recognize? Did they already turn on the AI government management program full of bugs, trained on decades worth of previous government disasters? Did they just say good luck to the stack of video cards and quietly check out? Weird times. Hard to look away. The national story this summer is a very ancient sort of story, and we are wired to pay attention to such events. It is deep within our cultural memory. The decline and fall of the king. Substitute whatever term for this figure where you live, this person who is the named leader of a society. It's one of those basic stories, and it's a tragedy. That's what's going on. It happens now and then, and it's always chaos. More chaos erupted from Lyndon Johnson stepping down in 68 than from John F. Kennedy's head being blown apart in broad daylight in a motorcade a few years prior. You never know. You can find the patterns, see where things are generally going. Even if every generational telling of this tale goes down in its own peculiar way. But only suckers bet on exact historical parallels. It's always different enough to upset the apple cart. We are in a very strange moment in the history of people on Earth. For the first time, because of species-wide decisions we only think we are making as individuals, the oldest people are beginning to outnumber the younger people. There are more Americans 60 and over than 16 and under. All these generational psychodramas play out on our national stage and in the mass media. In Sir James Frazier's The Golden Bough, central to his folkloric theories is the usually violent succession of kings. In particular, the King of the Wood, a remnant of a prehistoric priesthood in which the incumbent was removed by murder. And such was the new king's election. This sacred king, in other traditions, was sacrificed by the people themselves as their necessary part in the crucial cycle of nature. The eternal churn of generations. And so we watch transfixed. Some mourn him. Some act to dispatch him more quickly. And most await the chance to sing the old song, "The King is Dead, Long Live the King." The story of the fading old king is one of our oldest. We instantly recognize it, we know what it means. It's the death of an era, the uncertain transition to a new time. It's why every century for 1,000 years has had a distinct historical style. A vibe, if you will. When it changes from century to century, is the known unknown. It will shift and it will be cataclysmic, and that is its nature. But at what specific point in a given century, no one knows far in advance. No one knows the exact day or hour. Until it's here. But if you study these events with that very long view, the owl's eye view, you will not be skittering around in despair or excitement. You will simply know that these things happen and you watch, like the great bird of prey atop a tall pine, awaiting its opportunity. Let me read you this passage from The Face of God by Roger Scruton, published in 2015. Quote, am I not supposed to read where it says the word, quote? Somebody's talking in my earpiece. Sacred places are the first places to be destroyed by invaders and iconoclasts, for whom nothing is more offensive than the enemy's gods. And we should recognize that much of the destruction of our environment today is deliberate. The result of a willed assault on old and despised forms of tranquility. For there are two broad approaches to building: the way of settlement and the way of disruption. Often when we settle, we fit our lives into an existing and already consecrated pattern, strive to inherit the order established by those who have come before us, and to honor the spirit of the place. But the iconoclast seeks to replace old gods with new, to disenchant the landscape, and to mark the place with signs of his defiance. From a series of lectures published in 2015 as the book The Face of God. Sometimes we have got to follow it. Like it or not, some of us have a horse in the race. And many of us are only here for the horse crashes. Like in the movie Ben-Hur, which had historically accurate chariot races filmed with real people, real horses. Oh, the movie audiences went crazy over that stuff. The great capital of Byzantium fell into chaos over rioting green and blue team fanatics more often than the Turks menaced the great fortress city. The spectator sports riots got so unhinged, the one emperor brought in the legions to slaughter them all. The blood soaked into the Nika riots, January of the year 532. 30,000 rioters killed when a chariot race turned into a rebellion against Justinian. From Amboy to Zyzix and across the great Mojave Wilderness, this is Desert Oracle Radio. Soundscapes on the program are by Red, Blue, Black, Silver. Go see them on Bandcamp. I think you can buy and download 10 or 12 of his records for less than the price of a value meal at a fast food place. I want to say hello to my old pal Kevin Hansel, who used to work and live out at Roy's in Amboy. And I've had this pile of mail that I'm very slowly getting through from the winter holidays, mostly. And this week I opened this cheerful Christmas card from Kevin, along with some of his lovely Route 66 gas pump postcards, because I've mentioned how I like to use postcards as bookmarks. So much better than using the cancer-causing thermal imprint receipt from the bar, you know? Try not to cook yourself. The big heat wave is gonna relax a bit, they say. Hold on, and good night from the voice of the desert.
Well, it's the bottom of the hour, and you are listening to Desert Oracle Radio Replay on KGVM 95.9 FM, Bozeman Community Radio. Hey, did you know that in 1886, a wolf-like creature was shot in the Madison Valley, and it has never been firmly identified? A November 14th, 2007 Bozeman Daily Chronicle article says the taxidermy mount is in the Madison Valley History Museum in Ennis. I think I just added that to my list of things I want to see. Well, in the meantime, here is our second episode released by Ken Lane on July 10th, 2020. It's titled The Mystery Pig. Have fun.
Transmitting from the Mojave Wilderness in Joshua Tree, California, now is the time for Desert Oracle Radio, the voice of the desert.
Night has fallen on the desert, and there's something I've been puzzling over for the past couple of weeks. Derek, a listener up here in the high desert, sent three very strange photographs, which will be up on the website tonight. It's desertoracle.com. Click where it says radio. That's the blog for this program. A lot of people don't know that. I guess I never really mention it. Well, I've seen a lot of strange, dried up, dead stuff in the desert, but these pictures are something new to me, anyway. Let's hear Derek's original note. Found on a trail in Yucca Valley. Mojave Desert Land Trust folks told me we are out of range for javelinas and there should not be any feral pigs in the region. Joshua Tree National Park biologist says they do not know what it is, but cannot look into it further because it's not within park boundaries. Pretty weird. There are all kinds of odd sights. The other day I saw a mangy young coyote cross the road, and that's just a sad sight. Out in the heat of the day, crossing the road and ducking behind some ugly house with nine pickup trucks parked on the scrape sand outside, just a forlorn scene. Some coyotes do recover from mange, and some don't. If there's a coyote with mange around your property, call your local wildlife rescue organization and see if you can get some mange treatment, which you put out in some food bait. And for God's sake, don't call Fish and Wildlife because they have a murder unit, a death squad, that goes out and kills wildlife if anybody reports it. Bobcats, eagles, especially coyotes, but pretty much anything that moves. USDA Wildlife Services, God, what an evil organization. Wildlife Services. Defund them. Defund all the bad people who need to shoot guns at living things and call it work. That's not work, that's murder. Well, they are all getting defunded. We'll get to all of you, don't worry, coming soon. Now, sometimes people see a coyote that has lost most of its fur to mange and they think, well, that's a chupacabra. because every now and then a photo of a mangy coyote or a mangy fox gets to the dummies over on Facebook and they just lose their minds. What's left of them anyway? The chupacabra is a mystery animal, a cryptid, as they say in various circles. It is like our own Yucca Man and Desert Sasquatch, often associated with green fireballs and other such oddities low in the sky. Now, a funny thing is that the Bigfoot researchers just get furious when people report the common combination of a cryptid, a hairy monster, or a big mystery cat, what the English call ABCs, or alien big cats, along with any kind of light show in the sky or other such oddities. Bigfoot researchers don't want to know. They will aggressively leave this part out of their Bigfoot reports because they're so dedicated to the idea of Sasquatch and Yeti being physical, biological primates that they just can't with the UFOs. But the facts are the facts. No Bigfoot or Yeti or whatever has ever been found. No DNA, no dead specimens, absolutely no evidence of a animal. People see them. Sometimes there are big weird footprints. Sometimes there are blurry and usually faked photographs and film. But there are thousands of years of stories and legend and mythology about such entities that you'll find in the indigenous cultures all around the world. So there is something to it. They are real enough to scare you into a heart attack walking some lonesome trail at night. Real enough that countless people have been awoken at camp by strange beasts that do not behave like the usual bears or raccoons, raiding the cooler for beer and bologna sandwiches. Sometimes they just circle your tent for a while and then maybe, very slowly, they might begin to work the zipper on your tent flap. And the stench of such things is absolutely terrible. The smell of sulfur, rotten eggs, the devil's stink. Oh, and then you know that demon life has got you. And its sway. And then they just disappear. Maybe you'll find some enormous footprint. Maybe a couple of them. And then they just fade out, fade away. John Keel, the journalist who made the great UFO and monster waves of the 1950s through 1970s the focus of his work, wrote a number of good books on the subject, and I find little to disagree with in his conclusions. Now, what were those conclusions? That all such phenomena is related. That these things show up and manifest themselves and behave in peculiar ways. That they happen in waves or flaps with strange connections that have meaning for us, but little meaning outside of such odd and occasional context. You get UFO and monster flaps clustered around state lines, political boundaries that should have no meaning in nature, happening on specific days of the week. John Keel focused on the great UFO waves of the middle and late 1960s and found that most sightings were on Wednesday. Woden's Day. What could that mean? Recently, people have fed a bunch of online UFO reports into databases, and unsurprisingly, sightings are most common on Saturday evenings, when people are enjoying the weekend outside playing sports or barbecuing or camping or on road trips. The difference here is that Keel's data set was made up of high strangeness events, close encounters with odd associated phenomena like electronic interference, psychic messages, weird coincidence and synchronicity, encounters with entities from what Hollywood calls space aliens to hairy red-eyed monsters to biblical-style angels of light, to the eternal white goddess or white lady, sometimes called La Llorona in our part of the world. The experiences are often aggressively weird, which every ancient culture identifies as the spirit of the trickster. Something's going on there, and the more we try to rationalize it, the crazier it becomes, the trickier it gets. Those weekend sightings are just stuff people submit to a website. They're generally misidentifications of regular stuff in our too crowded night sky. Military flares, aircraft, meteors, crop dusters, and those lines of Starlink satellites, which I'm going to make that Elon character clean up one of these days as part of his parole. Anyway, we don't have javelinas up here, it's true. And pig is not a word that comes to mind when I look at these pictures. It looks more like, I don't know, it looks like a Muppet that was cursed by a Bruja and came back as a living animal only to die in the desert in Yucca Valley of all places. It's got about a half dozen rounded teeth, all pointing out at weird, useless angles, useless for defense or eating or just useless. Too far apart to do anything. And some kind of like Wookiee fur that's all matted and caked. And maybe a sort of spine sticking out. I think it's a Muppet that was cursed to briefly become alive and live in 2020 as punishment. But why would anybody do something like that to an innocent Muppet? You know what they say? What goes up the Muppet's back end is not the fault of the Muppet. Talking about the hand. The human hand or the devil's hand. Go look at those pictures when you get a chance. Don't go look at them right now. Don't mess it up. Don't mess up the experience. But when you get a chance, take a look if you feel like it. And if you can figure out what's in these pictures, well, I'll buy you a drink at the show on July 17th. Mostly we get real nice letters and emails and comments here at Desert Oracle. We have just the right kind of audience right now, not so big that a lot of dummies slip in, you know? But now and then. I got this message on Instagram the other day, and sure, I appreciate the people who follow us. And I like to look at other people's desert pictures. The weird ones, especially. So I appreciate the follows. Thanks for the follow, as they used to say on MySpace. Remember that stuff? Boy, the internet sure looked weird then. A lot more fun, too. People could do whatever they wanted. MySpace profile pages would have 100 insane GIFs flashing and animating, and they'd load so slowly that some random thing, like Andre 3000 nodding and playing drums, a hamster dancing, a flaming skeleton riding a motorcycle. Some random thing would start moving long before anything else. There would be goth pages, hip-hop pages, anime pages, pages made by teenagers who made the mistake of enlisting and wound up in Iraq or Afghanistan. And now they're just fighting for a little bandwidth at night. There's a funny thing the Pentagon did way back then. They banned MySpace on the Middle East U.S. bases, but they allowed Facebook. That's because back then, Facebook was only for people with academic email addresses, people who went to four-year universities. The officers. The officers could be connected to the world, but not the soldiers and the Marines and the airmen. It's a caste system, you know? So, Instagram is mostly nice people, but sometimes they got a bone in the middle of their brain, you know? As Borat said. Sometimes it's harmless, like when Googly Eyes 1989 or whoever sends a message that says, "Can you check on my subscription?" And I'm thinking, well, Googly Eyes 1989, where would I even start? Because that's all it says. No address, no real name. What am I supposed to do with that? And a check on Googly Eyes 1989. Or I get a message from the radio station, you know. Chuck from Landers wants you to call him. Chuck, I'm sorry, I'm not calling anybody. The radio station doesn't even know my phone number. I barely remember it myself, so rarely do I use a telephone. I leave it turned off most of the time, and then when I do power it on, it's just a bunch of potential spam. I wonder if potential spam has some kind of issue with their Desert Oracle subscription. That's why Woden made email, so I don't really have to wonder about that. Anyway, there's nothing like real letters in the P.O. box. We do appreciate this stuff, and I apologize that I can't read them all on the air. The show would be nothing but me reading the mail, which sounds like some corporate podcast concept, but we're not here for some dumb concept from the focus group over at Stitcher or whatever. We do a radio program here, and we endeavor to make it good and keep it mixed up. Yeah, let's see. This letter is shaped like a taco. Although there's some weird stuff on this taco. Maybe it's a fish taco. It says, "Que pasa?" That's printed on the inside of the taco. "Greetings from Western Maryland. I'm writing on behalf of myself and my husband, Matt. This stationery was a gift from him." Matt, I'm not going to invite you to pick out my stationery. "We like listening to your podcast, a weekly high point and ritual since we discovered Desert Oracle after our first trip to Joshua Tree this past January. We're disappointed we won't be able to listen to your next campfire stories. To celebrate our 1-year wedding anniversary this June." That was the pre-pandemic plan. "We'll be back when the time is right, though. Joshua Tree National Park is out of this world. We appreciate the spirit of your work and how you invite a collective curiosity and mutual respect for all that arises in the desert." Continues to the back of the taco. "Keep on keeping on. Peace, Alicia." And then Matt chimes in, "Thanks for being the voice of the desert, Matt." Well, thank you, Matt. Well, thank you, Alicia. I think it might be a shrimp taco. I think there's a shrimp on here. On some cabbage. Here we have a postcard, classic postcard of a motel court, Moore's Motel on US 93 in Boulder City, Nevada. Yeah, I have some friends there. It says, "Ken, do you have anything to say about peyote or mescaline?" I do, kind of, regarding those experiences in general, and I think that might be the next program, some stuff about that. And he says, "Be safe out there." You too. I don't know if it's a he, maybe it's a she, I don't know. They, them, I don't know. I appreciate it, though. There's a duck stamp. From Seattle, "Dear Ken, wanted to say hi from Seattle, where I patiently wait for the weekly Desert Oracle radio show and its quirky Voice of the Desert every Friday. I take out a bottle, sometimes a glass to go with it, and I look at that dark and empty expanse of water that is not the Pacific Ocean, yet almost looks like it. Or is almost it. And I'm thinking about the Mojave Desert and how the sounds over there are so very different. Sometimes, after a few glasses, the visions bleed into memories, and I can see myself driving up Old Woman Springs late at night toward Landers with the same show on the radio, dust on the dashboard. And every time, I hope I can see La Llorona, a rare animal, or strange light formations in the sky. But of course, nothing happens because I've been consciously wishing for it, so I focus back on the show and its gracious irreverence. Since I'm very lucky to work in an industry that did not get affected by the pandemic, I thought I would support your courageous enterprise and send you something. And she sure did. Thank you, Helene. Am I saying your name right? I don't know how to say Helene with a French accent. From Amboy to Zizix and across the Great Mojave Wilderness, this is Desert Oracle Radio, and I am your host, Ken Lane, and tonight we've been hearing this new bunch of stuff from Red, Blue, Black, Silver. You can call it a tribute to the great Ennio Morricone, who recently passed away and who made such beautiful, evocative music for movies. And we have Red, Blue, Black, Silver to fill that role on this program. The Desert Sun newspaper down in Palm Springs even described Red, Blue, Black, Silver that way last year. And you're in for a treat if you got tickets to next Friday's program. Live on stage at Pappy and Harriet's Pioneer Town Palace with Red, Blue, Black, Silver, and Herbie Benham IV. Live musical accompaniment. And we're going to take your calls from the audience. You'll see how we do it. Did it at First World back in October, the before time. The show is sold out, so unfortunately, if you show up and you don't have tickets, you won't be able to get in. But we are going to broadcast it, microcast it, I guess, on a little transmitter up there. So if you're in the vicinity, in the parking lot, in a vacation rental nearby, in your home nearby, driving Pioneer Town Road, you'll be able to hear it. Just kind of go through the dial. There's not much radio up there, but I'll put the frequency up next week. Thanks for listening, and good night from the voice of the desert.
My thanks to Ken Lane for his work on Desert Oracle Radio, and to the good folks at KGBM who make space for this show. Thank you, Gallatin Valley, and everyone for listening. I would love to hear from you, so please call and leave me a message or text about anything on your mind. The number is 406-404-6246. You can hear this program live on the air at 95.9 FM, Bozeman Community Radio, or you can stream it online at kgvm.org at 7 p.m. Sunday and 9 a.m. Monday. Our past Desert Oracle Radio replay episodes are also available on demand on the kgvm.org website. I'll be back next week with more desert and mountain lore for you. Till then, stay well and sweet dreams.